اللهم صل وسلم على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم أما بعد، التفسير. Today, inshallah, we'll talk about female circumcision. Well, why do we have to talk about female circumcision and give it like a session in and of itself? Because female circumcision is used very viciously, particularly in online, and there are certain websites that are devoted to fight female circumcision, and they consider it to be a huge violation, a huge crime against women. And then they also consider it to be part of Islam, and then they put one and one together, so they condemn Islam for legislating or prescribing or permitting, allowing female circumcision. So, do you think that female circumcision is a crime? Do you think it is part of Islam? Maybe we can ask you to know where we are, where we're starting from. Female circumcision. Is it a crime against women? Is it part of Islam? Okay, so your first, when you took off, you took off well. It depends. That should be your answer. It depends on what you mean by female circumcision. It depends. You always want to identify the or define the issue of contention. If you start out debating without defining the issue of contention, you could lose your breath, and maybe you're not in disagreement with the opponent in the first place, but you have lost your breath because maybe you're in complete agreement with the opponent. Maybe the difference between you and the opponent is a difference of form and not meaning. And in this case, if it is a difference in form, not meaning, then is it worth losing your breath over it? No. What is the difference in form and not meaning for the people who are studying the Sulu Fiqh? You just came out, but it was not in this session. We did talk about like a very big thing that there's a difference in form and not meaning in the Sulu Fiqh. Is there a sunnah mustaqilla? Is there an independent sunnah or not? Is there an independent sunnah mustaqilla, or not? Yeah, so the scholars disagree. Some of the scholars say the sunnah is, there is a sunnah al-shariha, explanatory. And there is a sunnah al-mu'akkida, confirmatory. And there is, the third category is controversial. Is there a sunnah mustaqilla, independent? Independent. Which I may like to quote instigatory, because it instigates rules that are not mentioned in the Quran. All of this between the scholars of Ahlus Sunnah al-Jama'ah is a disagreement over form and not meaning. Because at the end of the day, does any scholar from Ahlus Sunnah al-Jama'ah will tell you that it is permissible to marry a woman and her aunt? Simultaneously, to have a school-wise, a woman and her aunt? No one will. Okay, where is this in the Quran? It's not present. So, the people who say that that there is no independent sunnah, what would their answer to this be? No independent sunnah. What about this one here? But how do they answer this? They will tell you that Allah prevented marrying a woman and her sister simultaneously. By analogy, the Prophet extended this to a woman and her aunt. Same effective cause, which is قطع الرحم, to avoid cutting off the kinship, cutting off the ties of kinship. So at the end, you know, at the end of the day, that they disagree in meaning or form? In form, not in meaning. Because they would still accept the sunnah that is independent. They would accept it. They would not tell you, no, this is not in the Quran. None of the scholars of the sunnah would tell you this is not in the Quran, right? But they would say its origin is in the Quran. It is rooted in the Quran. Okay, so what about the prohibition of eating donkeys, domestic donkeys? They will tell you, Allah said, يَحَلُّ لَهُمُ He makes allowable for them wholesome things and forbidden for them unwholesome things. Well, He made forbidden for them donkeys. It's not wholesome. So its origin is in the Quran. But it's never mentioned in the Quran. So that it is a disagreement in form and not in meaning. So the reason why our scholars, may Allah bestow mercy on all of them and grant mercy and forgiveness, always started by the definition, you have to know what you're talking about. You have to know what you're talking about. In a debate and a disagreement, you know, oftentimes, if people just remember this one principle of dialogue, the debate, half of the debates between us Muslims will be spared. Because oftentimes we keep on revolving in the era, and in the first place, people don't know what they're talking about. If they know what they're talking about, they don't know what the other person is talking about. They, you know, have a common ground first, level the field, have a common ground. If that's what are we talking about? Before we start debating, I bring my proofs and you bring your proofs, let us first agree what it is that we're talking about and talk a little bit about my understanding of the issue, your understanding of the issue, because maybe we don't have to get into a debate in the first place. When it comes to female circumcision, they call it female genital mutilation. When you call it female genital mutilation, it's a logical fallacy. It's called, you know, poisoning the well. Because it is ending the discussion before you start. It is judging, you know, it's jumping to conclusions. Ending the discussion before you start. So if you call it female genital mutilation and you sit down with me now and try to argue, is it okay or not? Is female genital mutilation okay or not? It doesn't work this way. So we will call it female circumcision. But then we will say, what do you mean by female circumcision? Female circumcision could be, and certainly, you know, the modesty should not prevent us from explaining our being, because it's something that we need to understand so that we can speak to people. Inside the uterus, the fetus, the male and female fetus, they look pretty much the same, right? And they have the same external genitalia, sort of. But then, if the fetus was meant to become a male, then the testicles will start to descend. They used to be where the ovaries are. They start to descend downward. And then that thing that is, you know, there is a little bit of a protrusion that will become the male organ if it continues to develop, it becomes the male organ. And if it stops development and starts or regresses, it becomes the so-called clitoris for the female. The foreskin on the male organ is called the clitoral hood in the female. Now, the two labia in the male external genitals will fuse to become the scrotum in in the female external genital tubule, the LQs, to become the scrotum, and the scrotum will receive the testicles, which will be traveling downward to settle in there. This means what? It means that the clitoris is the counterpart of the male organ. The clitoral hood is the counterpart of the foreskin. The clitoral hood is the counterpart of the foreskin. Now, what is it that is removed in a male circumcision? The foreskin. Therefore, what is it that should be removed in female circumcision? The clitoral hood. Is the clitoris removed in female circumcision? No, Islamically it should not be removed. In fact, even if some of the scholars in the past used a vague language, but it's because they did not divide the clitoris into parts. They did not divide the clitoris into parts. When they used to remove the least possible amount of tissue from the clitoris, they did not mean that you remove anything from the clitoris. They considered the clitoral hood to be part of the clitoris, and that is the part to be removed. In the language of some other scholars, they were more precise. They said, تقطع الجلد المستعلي التي على هيئة عرف الديك ويبقى ما تحتها على أصله كالنواة. The external, superficial piece of skin that looks like, what is orphid beak anyway? That's a special name. I'll think about it. But the superficial skin will be removed. Crown? No, it's... The superficial skin will be removed, and what is underneath it, which looks like half a ball, will be left untouched, and that is the clitoris. So in the circumcision that has been prescribed or that has been permitted in Islam, there is no cutting of clitoris in the first place. What is being cut is the clitoral hood, not the clitoris. And in Encyclopedia Britannica, it says the history of female circumcision is long before Islam. That's my talk here. And it was practiced by many nations aside from Muslims. Britannica, which defines it as cutting the clitoris or part of it. You know, the source of this is Britannica. They talk about circumcision from the time of the ancient Egyptians and even before the ancient Egyptians, the female circumcision. So the ancient Egyptian circumcision, the pharaonic circumcision, is the worst of all types of circumcision, and that is not related to circumcision in Islam in any way. In fact, it is considered a crime in Islam. In fact, in Islam, the woman will, if someone did this to the woman, she'll deserve the whole diyah, blood money, as if he killed her or she killed her. Okay, so in this hadith, where there are several hadith that's reported by Bukhari and Muslim about circumcision, some of them are not nusus. They're not explicit on the issue, such as when the two circumcised parts meet each other, the full ritual ablution becomes mandatory. Now, is this hadith here telling us that circumcision is permissible? No. Is it explicitly telling us? No. It's not the explicit meaning, it's the manifest meaning. It is al-zahir, not the explicit meaning. But al-zahir, which is a manifest meaning, is also a legitimate implication. So in this case, the Prophet is saying that there are two parts that are circumcised that will be meeting or passing each other, and he does not condemn this. He does not condemn that the two parts are circumcised, which means that there is male and female circumcision. And these hadith are reported by Bukhari and Muslim. The one hadith that is considered to be a nas, which is explicit in its implication, is اختدي or أشمي ولا تنهكي or ولا تنهكي فإنه أنظر الوجه وأحظى عند الزوج. This is the hadith that is reported by Hakim from Dhahhak ibn Qays. May Allah be pleased with him. So اختدي ولا تنهكي or أشمي ولا تنهكي. اختدي means cut. أشمي means, you know, أشمي means? Shem, the smell. Yeah, smell. So, what's the relationship between Ashimi and smell? Because when you smell, people were very poor. This is a joke, by the way, in Egypt. So you go by the meat store and smell the meat. So it's like, you're getting some of it, but you're not getting anything. You're getting al-arab lal-jabhar. You're getting the attribute, not the essence. So he says, ashimni, as if you're cutting, but you're not cutting. So you're cutting the least amount of tissue that you would be able to cut. So be very, very conservative in cutting. Don't cut too much. Be very, very conservative, very light in cutting. So the Prophet said to Mu'atiyya al-Ansariyya, which used to practice female circumcision, أشمي, أخفضي, cut, but cut very little. وَلَا تُنْهِكِي, or وَلَا تُنْهِكِي, صَحِيحَتَان, don't cut too much. But he said cut. But does it mean that it's obligatory? Because he said cut. No, because she was already cutting. So he's not moving her from A to B. She's already cutting. But he said to her, cut, but don't be excessive. But cut the least amount of tissue that you could. فَإِنَّهُ أَنْدَرُ لِلْوَجِهِ وَأَحْضَى عِنْدَ الزَّوْجِ. For it is better for the brightness, you know, brightness of the face. And better for the husband as well. Better for the brightness of the face. Okay. Well, the scholars felt that by doing this, you actually decrease the sexual excitement in the female. That's untrue, by the way. You're decreasing the sexual excitement in the cases of morbidity, pathology, inflammation, disease. Because if there is inflammation between the clitoris and the clitoris, that will bring about morbid sexual excitement. Morbid sexual excitement. But the sexual excitement that is physiological, that is not morbid, not pathological, is not limited by circumcision. In fact, it would be physiologically conceivable to say that it is improved, enhanced by circumcision, because the sensitive part is the clitoris, not the clitoral hood. So when you remove the clitoral hood, which is on top of the clitoris, you're removing the barrier in front of the sensitive part. So physiologically, it makes sense that it actually improves the physiological excitement. It would certainly treat or prevent the morbid, pathological sexual desire. Okay? because inflammation between the clitoral head and the clitoris would result in that pathological sexual excitement. So the scholar said it is better for the brightness of the face, and it is also better for the husband. The brightness of the face is because she will not have excessive sexual excitement. For the husband, that is, don't be excessive. The first one is cut, because that's better for the brightness of the face, because she will not have excessive sexual excitement. Because when she has excessive sexual excitement, she can't release it, so then it will be bad for her psyche. But the second part, it's better for the husband, don't cut too much, otherwise you will cause frigidity. Okay, so is it FGM? Is female circumcision considered female genital mutation? Well, male circumcision is widely practiced in the West. Yes, it would be considered in the Chinese culture MGM, male genital mutilation, right? Well, let's be fair now. You know, what is male circumcision? It is to cut a piece of the foreskin, cutting a piece of tissue that the person is created with. Now, this is very common in America here. Many people, Christians, certainly older Jews, Christians and so on, they practice male circumcision. You know, among certain Christian denominations, 95% or more practice male circumcision. Now, couldn't the Chinese call male circumcision the same thing, male genital mutilation? Yeah, they can call it male genital mutilation because you're cutting parts of the fetus or of the baby. So that's the first thing. So don't get frightened by the words they'll throw at you in the beginning. The benefits of male circumcision are beginning to be recognized nowadays. In the past, the benefits of male circumcision were not recognized. Up until now, they are controversial. Up until now, they are debatable. And no matter how much you throw, how many studies you throw on them, they'll continue to be stubborn and resistant. You know, recently, just 2 years ago, the WHO came up with a study showing that it actually decreases the incidence of transmission of HIV. Male circumcision is helpful, according to the World Health Organization, in decreasing the incidence of transmission of HIV, which is not a bad thing at all, to decrease the incidence of transmission. Now, it has been almost not a matter of controversy that it decreases the number of urinary tract infections that the kids suffer from, that the children suffer from. All the people who work in senior homes, they'll tell you that it is good for hygiene, particularly later on in life. And there are many benefits. Yet, up until now, it is not considered a medical practice. It is a choice. Up until now, the American Academy of Pediatrics says that this is not indicated medically, but it is a choice. So why don't you say the same thing about female circumcision? Not indicated medically, but a choice. Okay. Now, the other issue here is that some people are already recognizing some benefits in female circumcision, by the way. There's actually been a book that was written in the 1950s by a professor of internal medicine, which recognized many benefits for female circumcision with regard to physical health and emotional health. This is a book here by a woman called Catherine Blackledge, and she's a science and medical journalist. She wrote her book. That's called The Story of V. I mean, don't worry about her, you know, style, which is aggressive. But the bottom line is, this is a female sexologist and a feminist. And she's writing a book called The Story of V, A Natural History of Female Sexuality. That book was not published by, you know, a bookstore in Karachi or Cairo or anything. It is Rutgers University Press. And she claims in the book several benefits, particularly psychological benefits, for female circumcision. Now, she calls female circumcision partial clitoridectomy. We say that that does not happen. In Islam, the clitoris is not touched. Because the part that needs to be removed, the part that needs to be removed is the part that is the counterpart of the foreskin. And that is the clitoral hood, not the clitoris. The clitoral hood is the counterpart of the foreskin. Now, look at this. This is from Wikipedia here, down below here. The quotation down below here. The outside portion of the clitoris, the clitoral glands, clitoral hood, is entirely or partially covered, or the clitoral glands is the superficial part of the clitoris that's covered by the clitoral hood or trachea tissue. That is homologous, like exactly like the foreskin in males, and beneath which smegma is formed and may collect. Smegma. Secretions. Discharge. Called smegma. Whitish, thick. Whitish in color, thick in consistency. Is actually blamed for causing cervical cancer in women that have uncircumcised mates. Because that smegma collects under the foreskin of males, and there have been studies that indicated that the circumcision for males would decrease the incidence, or the incidence and the prevalence, subsequently, of cervical cancer in females. Why? Because they say that the smegma is a precancerous substance. So now we're saying that this smegma, which is a precancerous substance, one of the benefits of female circumcision, as claimed by the proponents of male circumcision, which are thousands of doctors all over the West and the East and everywhere, is the fact that the smegma will now accumulate between the foreskin and the glands. Well, why don't you apply the same principle to the females? In fact, the beauty of Islam is male circumcision was emphasized more than female circumcision because there is less smegma here than there, and there is no accumulation of urine in the female, but there is accumulation of urine in the male, which will pose difficulties with purification, physical purification. So that is why you will find more emphasis on male circumcision in Islam than female circumcision, because the benefits of male circumcision far outweigh the benefits of female circumcision. That is why in Islam, male circumcision is anywhere between mustahab, emphasized, to wajib. And the majority would say wajib, mandatory. But whereas in female circumcision, because the benefits are more subtle in female circumcision, the Shafi'is would call wajib, the Malikis would call it mustahab, the Hanafis and Hanbalis would call it makrumah, or makrumah means a good thing to do, like a good thing to do for the woman, to honor her. What should most Western Muslims do? I would not recommend for Western Muslims to have female circumcision as long as they live in the West, because of the law. It's against the law, so you get yourself in difficulty and hardship, and you get your community in difficulty and hardship, And the correct position on Tidyon circumcision is that it is recommended. At least it is permissible in sanction, mashrua. It makes perfect sense that it would be recommended. And why? Because if there was no benefit that outweighs the harm, then inflicting this much pain on the child would be cruel, brutal, and would not be approved in Islam, would not be permitted unless there is a long-term benefit. It would not be permitted unless there is a long-term benefit. The long-term benefit is not significant enough to make it mandatory like male circumcision is. Since it is not mandatory, and it's against the law here, and it would cause you hardship, and you may end up in jail, therefore, the recommendation for the Western Muslims where this practice is criminalized is not to have it. Because that is when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave you some room in the religion where you can say, well, this is not mandatory, therefore I'm not going to have it. However, it is extremely important for Western or not Western Muslims, for all Muslims, to not doubt anything in our religion just because it has bad publicity in the media. Get to know what is this publicity about. What is the publicity about? Where is it coming from? Is it truly founded? Female genital mutilation, this talks about, you know, cutting part or all of the clitoris. It also talks about cutting part or all of the clitoris and cutting part of the labia minora. It also talks about cutting all of this and incising the labia majora. It also talks cutting all of this, incising the labia majora, and actually stitching the whole of the vagina to narrow it. All of this is criminalized in Islam. Whoever practices this, whether they are Muslim or not Muslim, by the way, this is not only practiced by Muslims. It is practiced by non-Muslims. Everybody knows from East Africa particularly. This is a very common and popular practice. Muslims and non-Muslims. What happened here that made some of our scholars, a little bit, a little bit shaken, is the fact that the WHO, had a World Health Organization, had a big study. Thousands of women were enrolled in the study, and the study, after a few years, indicated that female circumcision is harmful and it will cause a lot of morbidity at the time of birth and so on and so forth. This study is actually not only falsified knowledge. This study actually, I tend to not like accusing people of bad intentions, but it is hard, you know. Well, let us say that they did not mean anything bad, but the structure of this study, the way that it was designed, is quite interesting, the least to say. It's quite interesting. Why is it quite interesting? Because the WHO in itself had said earlier that cutting the clitoral hood is just like cutting the foreskin in a previous statement by the WHO itself. Then came the WHO in this study and divided the women that were to be studied into four groups. One group did not have circumcision at all. The second group had circumcision, which meant removal of the clitoral hood, plus part or all of the clitoris. Part or all of the clitoris. The third specimen had women who had all of this done, plus cutting in the labia minora. The fourth group, which is the pharaonic, that includes all of this, and incising the labia majora and stitching, you know, the whole of the vagina. That's like a completely criminal, ridiculous saying that is done in some places. Now, where is the Islamically sanctioned female circumcision in this whole scheme? It is not present. It is not present in any specimen. Because specimen number one, which is not circumcised, specimen number two, which is, you know, cutting the clitoral hood, plus some part or all of the clitoris, that is not there, even if you say, they say part or all of the clitoris. But even if you say part of the clitoris, that's still not the Islamic. Then came at this study, at the end of this study, the significant results, the truly significant results that should be accepted in a matter like this, were only in the third and the fourth specimens, not the second specimen. So the difference between the second and the first, the second is not even the Islamically sanctioned female circumcision. The Islamically sanctioned female circumcision does not have to do with cutting the clitoris. But this second, even that has the cutting of the one that has the cutting of the clitoris, we're not really far from the first. So all of the significant harms were in the third and fourth specimens. Now, they lump everything together, and then they present it to us, and then once we are presented with something that's called scientific, boom, this is science now, then we get muftis in the Muslim countries who say that this is the agreement of the Muslim, of the physicians, and this is the consensus of the medical community, and so on and so forth. Has never been the agreement, has never been the consensus, and there has never been a study to show that it is harmful. And we have the greatest proof on this. This very study by the WHO, they did all this work for us. They did so much work for us because they're proud and arrogant. They said in the beginning of the study that this is the first study to prove, the first study that is in agreement with the scientific method and so on and so forth, to prove the harm of female circumcision. So the WHO now brought me, you know, the WHO now saved me so much time and effort, spared me like hours of studying every single study that was done in the past. They scratched everything before and they said, this is the first one. You look at the first one and you'll find that it does not have anything to do with the Islamically sanctioned female circumcision. Therefore, we say with complete confidence and with a challenge to anyone, take it everywhere, to anyone, that will come and tell us that the female circumcision, as described by the scholar, that is sanctioned Islamically, has been proven by any science to be of any harm. And that's it.